Good evening, and welcome to the Tuesday, April 5th, 2011 Carver Board of Aldermen meeting. Before we begin our regularly printed agenda, I have just a couple of items. First, just an announcement, the community dinner is going to be this Sunday, the 10th of April, at McDougal in the cafetorium. The McDougal Cafetorium at 1 o'clock. And if you haven't been to the community dinner before, it is it's a really a fun event and brings out, I don't know, a wide array of people of all backgrounds who live in our community and near our community. And it's just a great community event. So come on out and meet some of your neighbors that maybe you've never met before. 1 o'clock, Sunday, the 10th. You have to get a ticket. I think you can get a ticket at the door, though. If
you no, I don't think you can.
No, you can't.
You have to
get it early because it books fast.
Okay, they're saying it's like 50-50 on getting a ticket.
I'd books say 75,
sells whatever. Out. Where do you get a ticket then?
You can get it at the
Tips, library and
communitydinner.org.
That's the best.
Says our resident web queen of Carver. All right.
She knows all.
She does. communitydinner.org. Okay. Now I would like to call upon members of our Carborough Arts Commission.
We'd like to ask Ms. Jackie Helby to come up to the podium and Chris to come up with, and the whole arts group, come on up. Everybody come on up.
Come on now.
If you've ever made a piece of art, go to the podium.
There you go.
It's the Carver Arts Party.
That's right. You know, Jackie and I refer to ourselves as the Jackies.
The two Jackies.
The Jackies.
The Jackies.
Carver.
Yeah, both Jackies in the house.
Well, Jackie number one of Carver. I would like to introduce a resolution of appreciation to Ms. Jackie Helby. Whereas Ms. Jackie Helby has been an untiring advocate for the arts in Carborough, and whereas Ms. Jackie Helby was an original member of the Carborough Arts Committee, and whereas Ms. Jackie Helby was the very first Carborough Volunteer of the Year, and whereas Jackie was a founder of the annual Carborough Music Festival, and whereas we're making her cry, and whereas her efforts were instrumental in the creation of the Carborough Film Festival, and whereas she has helped build the second Friday Art Walk into a premier art event imitated across the state, and whereas she has been the unofficial and award-winning photographer at Carborough Community Events for more than a decade, and whereas her website is the internet gateway to Paris of the Piedmont, and whereas her radio show, The West End Report, on WCOM 103.5 FM, and the People's Channel, which is called the Wackerman Stern Show, have featured local artists of all types, and whereas her work has helped create a community that honors, supports, and sustains the arts, and whereas her decade of service on the Town of Carborough Arts Committee, both as member and chair, has advanced the cause of the arts within our community, and whereas the mayor and board give Jackie Helby its thanks and applause, now, therefore, the Board of Aldermen of the Town of Carborough resolves, on behalf of the Town of Carborough and its citizens, the Mayor and the Board of Aldermen declare the first week of May 2011 to be Jackie Helby Week. That coincides with Carborough Day in the Town of Carborough. This resolution shall be entered into the official members of the Board of Aldermen and into the official minutes of the Board of Aldermen. I've been doing so well. And a copy, therefore, shall be delivered to Ms. Helving. This resolution shall become effective upon adoption. The foregoing resolution having been submitted to a vote. Da 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 da. And before we go any further, sometimes these resolutions and these events happen when somebody is leaving us in one way or the other, or is in danger of leaving us. Jackie is staying with us. There's nothing wrong with Jackie. That's not why we're doing that. So I will squash any rumors. Jackie, we all love you, and thank you so much for what you've given
And now you're...
Is there a second for the motion?
Second.
I'm assuming that's without the whereas clause about making her cry.
Exactly.
You can get up here again.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed. The matter passes unanimously. Jackie, thank you very much for all that you've done for our community. We do from time to time have a day in recognition of an important person in our community. It's the first time I can remember we've set aside a week for somebody. And you absolutely deserve it. So thank you for everything you've done for Carver.
I'm Chris Beecham. I'm the chair of the Arts Committee, and one of the reasons why I was willing to join the Arts Committee was because Jackie was there, and I could rely on her to know what was going on in the arts in Carrboro. And she came to me late last year and said, I've been on this committee since the very beginning, and I think it's about time to turn it over to the next group that wants to lead in the arts. And while I was very reluctant to accept that decision, I understood how she was making that decision. So at the next meeting, we talked about what we might want to do for Jackie. And so it's the Arts Committee, which she was one of the first members. And we said, okay, so it has to be something art that we do for her. And second, it has to be Carver. So we talked about what we could do. And ultimately, it was decided that we would commission for Mike Roy, the wonderful sculptor of Carver, something to give to Jackie. And I'm very proud to give this
gorgeous
to Jackie.
Aww.
Aww. Woo!
You don't
want to
say
no?
No, I don't.
Oh,
no, you all already know I love Carrboro. That's all that I can say. Thanks.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Jack.
And you're all welcome to stay for the meeting.
Actually, I ordered a beer, and I got her here.
All right, as long as it's local. All right.
So that's a beautiful piece of sculpture.
I have two quick proclamations to read. First is a proclamation on Autism Awareness Month. Whereas autism is a complex developmental disability that typically appears during the first 3 years of a person's life and affects their ability to communicate and interact with others, and whereas autism is 4 times more prevalent in boys than girls and has been found throughout the world and knows no racial, ethnic, or social boundaries, and whereas there is no known single cause for autism, but increased awareness and funding can help families today, and whereas in December 2009, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued their autism prevalence report and concluded that the prevalence of autism had risen to one in every 110 live births in the United States and to almost 1 in 70 boys. And whereas through the increased awareness and the services available to individuals with autism, those with autism can be made, the lives of those with autism can be made easier, while those without autism can expand their understanding of the needs and challenges that individuals with autism are experiencing. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, Mayor of the Town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the month of April as Autism Awareness Month in the Town of Carrboro. And and in fact, I'll point out that our local school system is really viewed as being a national leader, and I think McDougall in particular, a national leader in providing public educational services to children with autism. So something for us to be especially aware of and proud of as a community. The other proclamation, we have a lot to be aware of in the month of April. Is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And I encourage you to listen closely to some of the stats in this proclamation because they really can be shocking. Orange County, whereas the Orange County Rape Crisis Center assisted 379 survivors of sexual violence and their family members and friends during 2010. That's just in our community. Whereas the Orange County Rape Crisis Center works with the county's two school systems and other groups to provide all students with age-appropriate information about sexual assault prevention, reaching 9,750 youth and adults during 2009-2010 school year. Whereas one in five North Carolina women have been sexually assaulted at some point in their lives. One in five. Whereas in the United States, rape is the most costly crime to its survivors, totaling $127 billion a year, considering factors such as medical costs, lost earnings, pain, suffering, and lost quality of life. And whereas in the United States, one in six women and one in 33 men have experienced a completed or attempted rape at some time in their life. And whereas there are 16,285 registered sex offenders living in the state of North Carolina. And whereas the blaming of the victim continues to be an enormous problem in instances of rape and sexual assault. And whereas the Orange County Rape Crisis Center, a nonprofit volunteer agency which has been serving the community since 1974, is working with others in the community to stop sexual violence and its impact through support, education, and advocacy. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, Mayor of the Town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the month of April 2011 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I encourage all citizens to speak out against sexual violence and to support their local community's efforts to prevent and respond to these appalling crimes. All right. So, with that grave note, we are on agenda item A, request from visitors and speakers from the floor. I have, I think, two folks who are going to come up and speak. If y'all will come up to the podium up here, you can walk in front of the desk. Yeah, I believe this.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Cohen. I'm a senior at UNC.
Hi, my name is Blair Spud, and I'm also a senior at UNC.
And today I'm going to talk to you about a proposal for a human rights commission in the town of Carrboro on behalf of the Human Rights Center. On April 6, 2009, Carrboro took a major leap at becoming the second city to become a human rights city and a leader in the promotion of human rights when it adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a guiding principle. Blair, Alfonso, and I are here tonight to present a proposal sponsored by the Chapel Hill and Carrboro Human Rights Center. We are proposing the creation of a human rights commission to ensure that Carrboro continues to be a leader in the promotion of human rights. Such a commission would work with town departments collecting data to ensure non-discrimination. The Human Rights Commission will compile an annual summary, submitting it to both the mayor and Board of Aldermen. The mission of the Human Rights Commission is to guarantee that the individuals who reside within Carrboro are not discriminated against. The Human Rights Commission will also work with community organizations and agencies to encourage community awareness of the fundamental rights outlined in the Declaration. And now I'll turn to my colleague Blair, who will tell you more about the duties and powers of the commission.
The duties and powers of the proposed commission are as follows: to promote non-discrimination in employment, fair housing, public accommodations, and education throughout the town of Carrboro, to promote equal employment opportunities for all residents, to promote the well-being of migrants who reside within the Carrboro community, to receive complaints of possible discriminatory practices, to recommend legislation to government officials that aim to combat bias and discrimination, to support law enforcement in their continued effort to promote non-discrimination, to develop and strengthen partnerships with nonprofit organizations encouraging non-discrimination, to establish monthly committee meetings, to educate town personnel about human rights, and to provide data that informs the public as to the basis of the audit. The goal of the Human Rights Commission goes hand in hand with Carrboro's ongoing and projected plans toward improving the welfare of its residents. We propose that the department units clarify the objectives of self-evaluation and of an audit that are consistent with the non-discriminatory aspects of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which the town has already adopted.
And lastly, we just want to say that we propose that commission be comprised of at least 10 individuals. We hope it would be town members in Carrboro and also some students from around, from the surrounding area. And we also suggest that a website be created to aid in transparency, that which the students can help build. And we want to make note that the proposal is revenue neutral. And we want to thank you for your time and consideration and your support for being at the forefront of the promotion of human rights in Carrboro. And we're going to call up Alfonso, who is our colleague and also works at the Human Rights Center, to tell you more about the work that they're doing.
Hello again. I'm Alfonso Hernandez. I personally work at the Human Rights Center in Carrboro, in Abbey Court, the community, and other communities as well. Since last time I came, we have made a lot of more progress within the community. We have two apartments now, bottom and upstairs, and it has really helped us with the children, since the children have increased since the first year we opened, and we are luckily receiving more kids that are not even from our community or go to the school of go to Scroggs necessarily. We get Carrboro and I believe Sewell and other elementary schools around, that has gone pretty well. The children have really increased with the tutoring. Their grades have increased, and we provide that gap which the parents cannot fulfill at, because I personally, growing up in a migrant family, my family could not help me with my homework. So it has been really helpful. But we not only help them educationally, it's also an opportunity for them to bond socially with university students who come and help them. We work with the community as well. The community has also felt very comfortable with coming to us when they have any questions or just want to be around. And the ESL classes, we have ESL classes for the adults who want to learn English, not even if it's, I've had parents come up to me and say that they necessarily aren't going because they expect themselves to speak English fluently. They're going there because it's very enjoyable and they bond a lot with the UNC students. And it's very nice to see UNC students and the community members communicate and kind of see a piece of their own world. So it's really opened the eyes of UNC students. I don't like to say we provide, because it's kind of very reciprocal. The community is very dear to me, as well as the family and the children. I've lived there a long time, and a lot of them know me there. There's a whole bunch of other things that are happening at the HRC, like soccer. We have this group called Street Soccer, and the children play outside, as well as the adults, I believe. And it has really been something that has become part of the children's culture and the community. So that's
all right. Nice. Thanks, Alfonso.
Thank you.
I don't know if all of the members of the Board of Aldermen have been at one time or another to the Human Rights Center at Abbey Court, but if you have not yet been, then I really strongly recommend going and checking it out. I haven't actually been since they've expanded into a second apartment, so I need to go back and check it out myself, but there's some great work going on there, and I think we really appreciate everything that y'all are doing for Abbey Court, for our whole community. I think with regard to this proposal, that probably the appropriate thing to do would be to refer it to the town staff for some reaction to it. Is there a motion to that effect?
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we refer the...
Mark, I would also ask, since we had drafted the resolution, that when staff looks at it to see how this document aligns with what we had originally proposed.
With the resolution we adopted a year or two ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Not passed unanimously. So what will happen next is that the town staff is going to take a look at this proposal and bring us their opinion or reaction to it, and the Board of Aldermen will then take whatever subsequent action at some later time when the manager reports back to us. Probably I would think before our summer break, but it could be May, June, somewhere in that time frame.
And that's our normal
procedure
for how those things happen.
Right. Okay. Thanks very much.
Keep up the good work.
I should have said at the beginning of the meeting that Dan Coleman could not be here. His child care arrangements apparently fell through, and so he is at home with a... Or actually, I guess he's at home with a sick child.
Yeah.
Was it hard?
Yeah, I think.
For Mish.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway. That excused absence, if you will. Item C, our consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Okay. If you would permit, before I get to that, I'd talk with you about...
Oh, yes, sir.
I'm proud to present to you all tonight our new Economic and Community Development Director, Annette Stone. Annette, if you'd stand up. Annette started with us last Thursday, and as you all know, she came to us from the city of New Bern, and we're just really excited to have Annette. She's already been out meeting folks in the community, and she'll be doing a lot more of that. So please welcome Annette.
All right.
Welcome.
Great.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Welcome aboard.
Thanks, Steve. All right. Consent agenda.
All right. Item 1 is approval of minutes of the previous meetings of March 15th and March 22nd. Item 2 is recognition of a donation to the Town of Carrboro Recreation and Parks Department. Item 3 is consideration of an appointment to the Arts Committee. Item 4 is a request to approve a budget amendment. Item 5 is a request to approve Safe Routes to School non-infrastructure grant project ordinance. Item 6 is a resolution authorizing the sale of surplus town property. Item 7 is revision of the fund balance policy and capital projects fund. And item 8 is a resolution establishing an Orange Water and Sewer Authority delegate charge.
I want to pull number 2.
Yeah, I was going to make sure we...
Mm-hmm. I'd like to just pull number 8 for a comment.
For a comment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's...
1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Okay, I pulled number 2. Number 2 is recognition of a donation to the Town of Carrboro Recreation and Parks Department. This is part of our consent agenda. I just want to publicly thank the parents and the coach of this team that donated monies to our Recreation and Parks Department to help the basketball league offset some of the costs of the league. The volunteer coaches, John Ring, and the various parents who donated, William Breinhart and West, William and Amy Schwartz, Deborah Vanderford, Catherine and Chad Watson, thanks so much for donating to that program to help our costs, help hold our costs, and I'll move the item with that.
And I just want to add to that you know, recognizing the coach in that way is a wonderful sense of community, and I think that that's a great thing for a community to do, to step up and recognize their coaches that way.
And anybody else who wants to recognize their coach,
that's right.
Please give
Absolutely.
Us a call. We're going to use using the funds for our to be a part of our financial assistance program. So it'll the money will go to help make sure that lower income families get to fully participate in our recreation program. So
much appreciated. So I
win all the way around.
Yep.
All right. Item C2 is moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. On number 8.
I just wanted to, for one, thank Dan for putting up effort to create this resolution and adopting a charge for the town's representatives on the Orange Water and Sewer Authority Board of Directors. It's a very valuable way in which to assure that the concerns and interests of the town of Carrboro are represented on the OWASA board, as water is such an essential part of for the community, and it's important that the concerns of our community be reflected and represented on the OWASA board. Just wanted to point that out.
All right, which will be a nice segue into the next item on our agenda, as a matter of fact. So I'll take that as a motion for DA.
Second.
Yeah. It's all the moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Item D1, a discussion of request from OWASA to reaffirm town support for Taste of Hope customer assistance program. Mr. Manager.
And we have several representatives from OWASA and IFC, and I'm not sure. Where are you going to be making comments? Okay.
Good evening. I'm Braxton Fushi, one of your representatives. Bill is also here, too.
William Scott, representative. Hello.
And we would, at one of your meetings, you requested a meeting with us, too. And we had picked the date of April 12th.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I haven't heard back from Sean.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, the library rezoning, potential library site rezoning, has been moved to April 12th, so that probably we're going to be forced to move to a different date in June, or that's the current thinking, but we'll get back to you soon about that.
Well, if it's June, you probably won't be able to hear from me.
Because
I come off in June.
Oh, really?
There was a May date on it. As far as I recall, Sharman gave us April and May and June.
Sharman sent that May date in there. That's the board's budget work session.
We'll have to work on it. I'm sorry. Anyway, it probably will not be April 12th it will not be April 12th because we've got so much to do with this library rezoning issue. So. We'll figure it out one way or another. But anyway, welcome.
Well, as soon as you have a date in mind, please let me know because I need to check my calendar, too. And that's the reason we had agreed on that date, because we were available, both of us were available on that date. Okay. And that was one of the dates we received. So
yeah, I apologize. It was there was a point at which, anyway.
We were going to be free and then we
staff
were.
Member. Yeah. From another jurisdiction who's not here, an agency not currently represented, made a mistake, and the 19th date will not work for the rezoning hearing, so we're having to move to the 12th.
Okay, well, just let us know, and we'll try to work it in. But we're here tonight for a different reason. We come to speak about the Taste of Hope. As you know, that we work with the Interfaith Council on that, and Chris is here. He's the executive director. He'll speak to you after we get get through here. In 1977, OWASA put partnership with the IFC to launch the Taste of Hope for customers' assistance. For OWASA's customers who voluntarily donate, and what they do is they round off their monthly bill to the next whole dollar to provide for these funds for the Interfaith Council of the Taste of Hope. And what we have now, very gratefully, 1,200 people have done this, or 6% of our customer base do this for the Taste of Hope, which is about $7,000 a year. But that doesn't last that long. And so we're working on another way that you can donate, and it's not in this proposal, but we're working on another way that you can donate through our website. So we hope that's going to be successful. And you see, when they leave the Taste of Hope program, when I say leave, and the money runs out, then the only other places they have to go is other organizations. And as you know, during these times, they're hit very hard. And this $7,000 can go very quickly. Mm-hmm. However, we need a far greater reach, more emphasis on this program. And we have implemented these, hopefully these other ways that you can donate to help the Taste of Hope program, because as you know, it's a very central program. And water is one of the most essential things that we can use.
One thing that I did want to mention for anyone out there in TV land, you can call OWASA if you would like to make a donation. The number is 537-4343. That's 537-4343. Or you can go to the website. So as Braxton mentioned, you know, we're trying to think of other ways in which we can take advantage of the generosity our community's already expressed. So you can round up to the nearest dollar, and we are working on some other things where people can just make straight donations or just put $5 more in their bill or something like that. But it's important to recognize that we have restrictions on what we can do. You know, we're a nonprofit, and so we've got to keep our costs low. It's a cost-of-service business. And so we have to be as creative as we can in finding other ways, you know, to access it. So part of what we're doing here tonight is to just raise this issue with the town and ask for an explicit commitment to the program and an acknowledgement of the benefit to the community. And it's significant. It's a very nice program. But it's but a drop of water, if you will, in a very thirsty community that has limited means. I'm not sure if there's anything else really to add. I think I'd rather let Chris talk about the program directly, but am I correct in thinking you all have something in writing?
Yes.
Okay, good. So enough said from us.
Okay.
Thanks for your attention to this.
Stick around for 1 second.
Oh, yeah, we'll wait.
I just have a question about it. But
thank you, Braxton and William, Mr. Mayor, alderpersons. Good evening. I think this is a great opportunity for all of us to be here, especially when you're talking about your support of human rights, as you did previously. And Mark, all of the numbers that you were sadly reading off actually reflect most of the women who stay at Homestars. We've had literally hundreds and hundreds of women that are victims of sexual assault and sexual violence and rape. There's very few that come into that program that haven't had that experience. And we appreciate your resolution. And we also appreciate your continued partnership with OWASA and the IFC on this incredible program. And I was with a number of my colleagues the other day who are quite concerned about the state of the economy, the state of government, and deeper human service cuts that are being considered by all governments right now. And this is happening at a time when the rich are getting richer, and the poor are about as poor as they can possibly be. And right here at home, one in five of us, I remember you said, Mark, one in five persons, victims of sexual assault, but one in five of us are poor. And that's 18% of our population, which has risen by about 4% recently, which exceeds the state average, about 2 points or 1.7 points. Our food stamp cases have shot up to more than 5,000 cases in Orange County, and that's an old number. 3,200 households, and the average number per household is 4.5 persons, from Carrboro and Chapel Hill, or those who work in Carrboro and Chapel Hill, now use our food pantry down the street. 3,200, that is an incredible number of people. Doesn't mean they come in every month, but it means that they're eligible to come in every month for food. 17,000 Orange County residents lack health insurance. And you've heard this before, but I keep repeating it because it's important. A minimum wage earner must work 113 hours every week in Carrboro and Chapel Hill to afford a two-bedroom apartment. So last year, through IFC's and OWASA's incredible partnership, we helped 226 households with Taste of Hope funds, amounting to about $7,500, as William and Braxton mentioned. And as Ed and I, it is here too, we've gone to the other governments with the same pitch and the same message. The expenses, however, for these particular households exceeded $15,000. Any additional funds that could be generated from OWASA customers with your help and influence would be greatly appreciated and helpful to OWASA households all over Carrboro and Chapel Hill. Your ongoing endorsement of the Taste of Hope resolution is an important step to respond to the poverty conditions I described. Endorsements by our local governments send a very positive message to household members about your concern, understanding, and hope for brighter days. Support resolutions are important steps for keeping folks in their homes, preventing homelessness and human suffering. And so we thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thanks, Chris. William or Braxton or maybe OWASA staff, with regard to this program, if for customers who do an automatic debit, who pay their bill through an automatic debit, is it possible to sign up for this? For the rounding up and having that automatically debited, okay, because that's certainly a very popular way to pay your water bill.
It's an easy way too. Yeah, you can just like think about it one time. You don't have to remember it each time. So
okay,
that's the reason we're proposing to try to get additional funds, whereby if you wanted to donate $1, $10, $15, $20 a month toward the Taste of Hope, you'll be able to do it through the website. You can't do it right now, but IT is working on that, trying to get that up.
Okay, excellent.
I wanted to say just a kind of a wild idea. I think anyone who is aware of the Taste of Hope program does it. I mean, it's the kind of thing that I think people just don't think about how easy it is to round up. I know when I lived in Durham, in a similar type program, you rounded up and it went to the tree program. But just, you know, it's sense literally from people that don't even, many of them just probably aren't even aware. And I was just going to suggest, Chris, the new porch program that's out there, you know, Susan Romaine and the other two ladies who helped found that, you know, once a month, as you know, they collect through their outreach to neighborhoods and cul-de-sacs and streets, they collect lots and lots and lots of cans and donations every month for not just IFC, but, you know, a couple of other food banks. It might be a thought maybe 1 month to ask Susan and the other organizers to have those block captains just go around the cul-de-sac one day as part of that effort. Because, you know, like, I'm a block captain on my block, and I would go to all four houses, and people would go to the houses on their street and say, hey, you know, as part of the food pickup, if you're not doing this, have them fill out whatever forms they need and turn them back in. Just a thought. I mean, I'm just sitting here trying to think of how do we outreach person to person to folks who may not know about it.
That's a good idea.
We'll suggest that.
Yeah, I'm sure Susan would be in favor of it.
The other thing I would like to add is during our retreat, we talked about an opportunity for having information on values that we want to share with the community or information on programs that are available in the community. And this would be an example of something that we would be able to encourage more visibly if we had these kinds of enlisting with, you know, the artists of our community to create pretty ways of promoting these kinds of programs. So whether it be attached to bus shelters or I don't know exactly what it would look like, but it would be something that we could promote.
I think even having small postcards that whether it went through Porch or several of the other organizations, just with the, you know, the phone number and the web address and letting folks know how easy it is to round up.
Can I ask, is it appropriate for, maybe this is also for Ed, but for you all to have something on the town's website?
Yeah, we could probably do something similar. We have a very We zealously guard our homepage organization.
We have the water. Yeah, the water update.
We goes out in Blue Thumb, which is one of that goes out with each bill.
Right.
And that's a paper thing, you know. And so we're obviously trying to work our way around that. But if local governments could also have some, at least an alert. I mean, it would be great if you could just click and make a donation. It would go to OWASA, but just something for your consideration. And the porch thing is a good idea. My wife, Jessica Ryan, is our rep, and we have about 30 homes that we do, and it's amazing how generous people are with it. So I bet you they'd be very amenable to something like that.
Well, Mark, we want to ask staff to look into
The website angle,
yeah, because we do have the, you know, the water update.
Yeah.
Right on the
foot.
All right. So,
which was good today.
Yeah,
Mr. Manager, if you would prefer that to Andy.
Let me make sure I'm understanding what we're being asked to do. If it's just to put some information on our website, that's one thing. If it's taking payments, that's a
large
issue.
Just creating creating another a link that goes right below the, because we've got the little drop of water there. We just.
Well, I won't belabor it right now, but I would like to talk to whichever of y'all about possible ways we might use Facebook or other social networking sites to promote this as well.
Mark, I just wanted to say this is the longest discussion that we've had on this topic with all of the government, so we're very, very proud of the way this is going.
All right. Well, I want to make it just slightly longer to add to y'all's pitch. I think one of the things that that people considering the possibility of participating in this program may not realize, and I think Braxton touched on this a little bit, but this is OWASA is only allowed to charge its customers for the services that it provides and not for anything else. By North Carolina law, as a utility, they can't sort of use their billing power to achieve some other social end besides providing the utility service they provide to the customers at the cost that it actually represents. So they can't simply decide to raise everybody's bill a dollar or round everyone's bill up to the nearest dollar and collect that money and do the right thing with it. You have to sign up voluntarily to do that. And that's just the way utility laws work in North Carolina and every state, really. So there is a need for people to do this voluntarily. And then the other point I wanted to make is that, your water and sewer bill may not seem like a big deal in somebody's life, in the life of somebody who's having financial troubles. But the truth is that when your water bill gets so overdue that OWASA has no choice but to shut off your water service, it means that your toilet does not flush. It means that you are in a public health emergency at your household. It means that if you don't get it straightened out and straightened out quick, that you are essentially forced to become homeless. And I don't say that to, I'm not trying to reach for melodrama, but that's the reality, is that you know, your utilities services are one of those factors that determine whether you have a home to live in or whether you don't. And So even as modest as a contribution as you can make is really, making a significant difference in people's lives. So, yeah.
I had a suggestion. You know how when you get a driver's license, you can check a box that says, like, you'll donate your organs if you are an unsafe driver? I'm wondering if, like, we have all these people going out to the lakes to use them recreationally, and when you go there, you sign out a boat door and you sign up for other things. I wonder if it could become kind of just standard for when somebody is signing out a boat or, you know, at the desk at either one of the lakes, if in addition they would say, oh, are you interested in the Taste of Hope program? Just fill out this form, and then once a week, who's ever, like, working in the houses in the offices at the lake could turn them in, because Orange County residents or OWASA customers get a lower rate at the lakes. So I wonder if when they're signing up for their low rate, they could also be asked if they would like to like join the program.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea. I mean, we were taking notes, and Ed's a good note taker. We definitely have to check with Bob Epting about that. I mean, I don't know how
tell
far
Bob
we go
it's
towards.
My idea.
Well, I'm sure he's down with it. But there are probably limits to which we can go towards solicitation. You know, I don't know. I mean,
well, you're putting it in people's water bills.
Well, I guess you're
and
right.
That's,
yeah,
well,
but anyway, just an idea. Just
no, it's
an
a
idea.
Great idea.
Yeah. Can't go swimming. They don't have their bathing suits.
They can't go swimming anyway.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, gentlemen, thank you for your presentation on this. We have a resolution. Is there a motion for?
Yeah, move attachment.
All right. The resolution is moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Okay.
All right. Item D2. I think, unfortunately, Alderman Coleman was the person who really sparked this agenda item, and he's not here, but I did speak with him earlier. And he wanted me to relate some thoughts on it, but did not ask us to put it off. So, Mr. Manager, do you have any presentation, or shall I just go ahead?
Ask.
Okay. Well, I think the essential point, which by now hopefully most of the aldermen have gathered from the variety of emails that have been shooting around, is that this year's recommendations from the Home Consortium were developed finalized at a meeting in which the towns of Hillsboro and Chapel Hill and the County of Orange were represented, but the town of Carrboro was not. We, owing to, we had staff vacancy because of the retirement of James Harris at that critical moment, and Alderman Coleman was not able to be at the particular Home Consortium meeting, and he made some significant efforts to try and get the date of that meeting changed to a time when he would be able to be there, but to no avail. And so he was concerned, and I'm concerned, not so much with the outcome of that Home Consortium process. I mean, I think they made some wise decisions without us, but I'm concerned that we need to ensure for the future that all of the jurisdictions that are a part of the Home Consortium are represented at those meetings, or in any case, at a minimum, that that we have some clear definition of what a quorum is of the Home Consortium for purposes of conducting its meetings. And I think Dan put forward this resolution.
Yeah, you know, I have several meetings that are on a county level also, and I think that this it's a problem trying to get all the folks together. But when you're a liaison and you represent the our board to a county commission or county committee. You know, you really need to be present, especially when it involves funds that are allocated. So I really appreciate Dan's effort in drafting this, and I'd like to move the item.
Before you move it,
go ahead.
One of the things in the memo that I don't think is in the was in the resolution. That it said that they agreed that the new agreement will contain an automatic renewal clause and the proportions will reflect the population. Now, I don't have any problem with the proportions reflecting the population numbers. They've done that for 30 years. The automatic renewal I find kind of problematic. I'm not sure that we always want to, that we never want to examine those numbers, you know, even if it's just a perfunctory one item on an agenda, so that because you never know what's going to happen, and if there's like an automatic renewal, then we're kind of locked in until when, mm-hmm. You know, until the state withdraws our charter or something. So
I kind
of... It could be at any moment, actually.
Yeah.
And that's in addition... I think that's separate from this resolution, but I think that's a really important point that Jackie makes, because I think we want to be able to respond to that action.
Yeah, I'd like to... I think that the experience that Dan related to us of how important it is for everyone to be participating in this conversation each year is the main... should be the main thrust of this resolution. And I would just... I wanted to suggest a couple of minor edits if folks are in agreement. If not, that's fine. But I think that the particulars of the event that precipitated this could maybe be taken out, these two whereases.
What is it, fifth and... One, two, three, four.
The fifth and sixth.
Fifth and sixth.
So that, you know, this is just my suggestion. The fourth one be reworded just slightly. Whereas an elected body should allocate taxpayer funds having participated in the process determining the use of those funds, and then have it going down to whereas the home program consortium agreement is up for renewal this year. In those two paragraphs that follow, I'm not so sure that they add to the point we want to make from this, which is, you know, look, from here on out, we need to ensure that we have a representative there, either us or our informed staff person or whatever. So my suggestion is we knock out five and six, revise four just slightly, and I don't think it takes away from the point we're trying to make.
But it becomes more diplomatic.
Yes.
That's okay for me. Let me ask a question about this, actually, which is so when is this home program consortium agreement renewal going to happen?
It's in May.
It needs to happen before May 13th, or I believe we lose the funding.
May expire. Okay. So, I mean, in a certain way, it seems to me that the essential issue here is the question of what is a quorum of the home consortium? What constitutes there being enough members of that consortium together in one place at one time in order for them to make a decision?
Well, it's also the inclusiveness of the elected officials.
That essentially goes to the question of what constitutes quorum. Mm-hmm. I mean, in other words. What does it mean for a jurisdiction to be represented, and how many jurisdictions need to be represented in order to make a decision?
Right.
And
wouldn't the agreement tell you that?
Well, that's the point I'm trying to get to, is that maybe what we really need is for that agreement to kind of outline the answer to that question, so that, because I think part of the problem that Dan was having in this particular situation is, well, I don't think the current agreement does sort of define who needs to be there or how many people need to be there. And
do we have a copy of the current agreement?
I don't know. But
I don't think we have it in our packet, so we don't.
Well, I'm not going to try and rewrite it on the fly or anything.
No.
But what I'm trying to get at is, I think almost a better solution than what's resolved here. I'm not opposed to what's resolved here, but almost a better solution would really be for that document, for the renewal of that document, to incorporate some new language that would clarify what does it mean for a jurisdiction to be represented, and how many jurisdictions need to be represented in order to have a meeting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this might be premature.
Well, I from that point of view, I, like the way this is worded now, it addresses the question of what we're asking the Board of Commissioners to consider prior to our adoption of the 2011 home allocation. But that's actually sort of the wrong deadline, if you see what I'm getting at.
But if it depends on when the home consortium will meet again, because if we make that assumption and they will not meet again before that May 13th date.
Well, I guess what I'm I don't have a real specific proposal here, but what I'm trying to get to is I would like for our town staff to work with the county staff on drafting some proposed language to go into that home consortium agreement that will, mm-hmm. you know, that will make it clear.
Yeah,
that
all
parties have to be represented.
That all four jurisdictions
I'm agreeing with
need
you,
to be represented.
But I'm just wondering, timing-wise, without this, would that mean that if our staff got together with county staff, it would still have to come back to the home consortium to agree?
We're not asking.
It's a procedural question.
I think the action that needs to happen is an action. It's the members of the home consortium that need to adopt the
That's
renewal
right.
of the
it's
agreement.
It's four boards
Hillsborough
that need
Town
to
Board,
right.
Chapel Hill
and
Board,
I don't know that
ours, and Orange Counties.
Well, can we have the therefore clause simply ask that the different jurisdictions consider this request in the renewing of the consortium agreement and direct it to the four bodies that are the ones that are going to be working on that? Maybe that's a way to.
One of the questions I had, because you know I'm a process person, one of the questions I have is there any, and many of you saw the questions I asked posed to Alderman Coleman was, what about a sub?
A substitute,
excuse me. I'll be more particular about that. So, y'all know I'm very hesitant to work in procedures for what I consider to be, I mean, we don't plan things thinking that a tornado's going to come every time it rains, or a hurricane's going to come every time it rains. And in the absence of having the home consortium agreement in front of us, it may very well tell us what we want to know. I mean, apparently, the three elected officials thought they had a quorum when they met. The difficulty is, if this should occur again, is there a way, for example, if, God forbid, somebody has some sickness and they can't go, and the other three can't meet, whoever they are, how do we resolve that? That's a process problem. It's a process problem. To me, I'm just saying, to me, it's a process problem. If we all belong to organizations that if you're the representative and you can't go, you send somebody else. An example, I was vice president of the missionary board in my church for a number of years. If the president couldn't go, guess who got tagged at the area meetings? I was there. So, you know, I just say I'm hesitant without a process for us to prevent this occurring again, because there could be someone else that can't show up for whatever reason.
Well, the problem, Joel, is that the meeting was scheduled at a time that the staff person knew that our representative could not be there.
The meeting was rescheduled.
It was rescheduled.
Our person went to all these regular meetings when
right.
they were normally at that time.
Right.
And when the meeting was rescheduled at a time when
right.
he couldn't find childcare.
Right.
Then it became problematic.
And we didn't have the staff at the time there. So
and that's kind of my point. We had a hurricane situation. Are we going to plan for everything like a hurricane situation, or are we going to ourselves put in some process that if this should occur again? Because really, the beef isn't with the county staff person. The elected officials were unwilling to move the meeting. And so that's a peer discussion, not a staff discussion, in my opinion. It is a peer discussion.
Okay.
Well, so how do we move forward?
Let me suggest this, that here's what I was trying to get to is to change it so it says, now therefore be it resolved, Board of Aldermen, Town of Carlborough, requests that the member governments of the home consortium, of the Orange County Home Consortium, incorporate the following principles into the home program consortium agreement renewal, and then A, B, and C down there.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know. Is C relevant or not?
C may not be as.
No.
I don't think we should put C in there.
Yeah, C doesn't. Because of the way it's reworded now.
C's not, but A and B. And I agree with the point that you're making, Joel, and I think that I'm sort of delegating some of the details of this to staff simply for the sake of, you know, that a bunch of lawyers need to give us some thought about exactly how to structure it.
Yeah, I'll just have to tell you. I understand why the board, the majority wants to do it, but I'm going to have to vote no because I just think there's a better way to resolve it, and I don't think this is the way. And in the absence of having the consortium home agreement in front of me, I just can't support it right now.
Well, I think I hear what you're saying, Joel, but even if it's in the agreement, then it's a fund that's in the agreement. It calls some attention to the other members of the other jurisdictions mm-hmm. that this is kind of a unique group that gets together. You know, we're all members of boards, like you say, where we get substitutes. Sometimes we have problems, even us or the substitute, getting there. But this particular meeting where this group is determining, you know, the allocation of the funds, it doesn't hurt to try to drive it home in a way that is kind of outlined, I think, generally the way we've revised it.
And even more than that, I mean, I've gone to meetings. I mean, I've had to get subs for some of my meetings. And if they're not making decisions that, you know, that when you've sat there after the long deliberations, you really know what's going on, that's okay. But in this case, they're making decision about funding.
It's one of the major meetings.
It's a major meeting, and they've had background. Sending a sub is not always the right answer just to have a physical presence. You really have to know what's going on and have the substance behind you. So I would even question whether a sub, I mean, let's just say Dan called me and said, Randy, can you cover this? And I walked in cold. Would that have helped?
But I think with enough notice, one of us enough would get the other one up to speed on what's going on.
Right.
So,
but the fact of the matter is just, you know, deferring to a sub is not always the best of situations.
If you don't have a process, and it is just my ethos.
I hear you.
I understand what the issues are. I don't like people making decisions when I'm not there that affect the town of Carrboro. But again,
I just wanted to understand the proposal versus what your concern is. And
well, I think
the mayor was saying to request that the members of this commission look into that issue and address it. And are you saying that the agreement itself is something that each governing body would have to alter to reflect?
Well, I think they'd have to if the change wants to be everybody has to be there or a designee, then it is not a majority. And not having the agreement before me, I'm just speculating. Okay? And there lies one of the issues. We don't have the agreement in front of us. And two, while it's serious, and I understand what the issue is, I think it's a peer-to-peer discussion. And so to say to the commissioners, when one member was there, and then, of course, you had someone from Hillsboro, and then someone from Chapel Hill, who said they could be there one day, and other people can't be there another day for reasonable, valid reasons. It is a peer-to-peer discussion with us and those different entities. We can suggest to the commissioners what they tell their county staff all day long. But at the end of the day, it is a peer-to-peer discussion between us, Chapel Hill, Hillsboro, and the commissioners with regards to this. So,
well, and our change here is to them. It's not just to the Board of Commissioners anymore. It's to all three
member,
other groups.
Member governments
right.
of the consortium. Well, is there
I mean, there's
I've suggested some changes to the resolve clause, and I think
Lydia has
suggested some changes to some of the whereas clauses. There was a motion of the original for the original, but there was no second for that quite yet. So would somebody like to offer a motion to this effect?
So it would be 1, 2, 3, and 4.
With four edited.
Four slightly edited.
Whereas elected body taking out.
So we should say whereas an elected body should allocate taxpayer funds.
Funds without having participated.
Having participated in
right.
the process.
Right. So there's just.
Having participated in the process.
Right.
Determining use those funds and then skip down to the last whereas clause.
Right.
And then you've made
an adjustment with that. Do you want to.
And then the resolve clause would say, now therefore be it resolved, the Board of Aldermen of the Town of Carrboro requests that the member governments of the Orange County Home Consortium incorporate the following principles into the Home Program Consortium Agreement Renewal, A and B. And A and B are a collaborative, deliberative, inclusive process, commitment to properly scheduling meetings so that at least one delegate from each jurisdiction is able to attend.
And then at that time, we would have that agreement in front of us, and we would be able to.
And that agreement, the renewal of the agreement is scheduled to come before all these different boards. Mm-hmm. Was part, you know, between now and apparently May 13th.
Okay, I'll move it with those changes.
All right, is there a second for that motion?
I'll second.
All right. The resolution has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed?
Nay.
Matter passes 5-1. All right. Item D3, report on the 2014-2020 Transportation Improvement Program project list.
Yes, Jeff Rubaker, our transportation planner, has a presentation for the board, and the action requested is to make comments and refer this to TAB.
Thank you. The statewide transportation improvement program is one of the ways in which the community expresses its support for transportation projects around town. And we all know that transportation projects take time. So it's perhaps not surprising that we're already talking about fiscal years 2014 through 2020. So we are being asked to submit a local priority list by NCDOT for consideration over this summer and the fall and beyond for the 2014 to 2020 statewide transportation improvement program. So the board has developed priority lists like this in the past, most recently September 2008. So this is not a new process for most of you. At the same time, some changes have been made to the TIP process, and that I'll go over in this presentation. The Transportation Improvement Program is a plan for statewide transportation investments. It's developed every 2 years, and it must conform to the long-range transportation plan, which every MPO must adopt. The long-range transportation plan for our region is for 2035. And this graphic at the bottom just kind of gives you an overview of where Carrboro fits in the statewide transportation improvement program, or the STIP. The statewide plan is made up of metropolitan area plans from around the state. So the Durham-Chapel Hill-Carrboro MPO develops a metropolitan TIP. So does Asheville, so does Charlotte, so does Wilmington, and all the other metropolitan areas over 50,000 in the state of North Carolina. And then there's also rural planning organizations that develop transportation priority lists for their rural areas. And within our MTIP, sorry for all the acronyms here, it's unavoidable in transportation planning, but within our MTIP Carrboro submits a local priority list. So do other jurisdictions, Chapel Hill, Orange County, Chatham County, Hillsborough. And those projects all get combined into the MPO's regional priority list, which then gets submitted to the state. So we are currently operating under the 2009 to 2015 statewide transportation improvement program. And we have another one, the 2012 to 2018 STIP, that will go in effect this fall. And then the 2014 to 2020 STIP is what we're talking about tonight. So it's just because these plans take a long time, there's a lot of overlap that happens. So I hope this isn't too confusing of a process.
Are those the beginning years selected by the Department of Transportation? Because I couldn't help myself and ask, well, what happened to 2010 and 2011? But I mean, to start. So they don't do it every 3 years or every 2 years. It's just when the DOT selects the starting date?
Yeah, they do it every 2 years. And this was originally called the 2011 to 2017. And then what happened was that there was kind of a change in the process at NCDOT, a change in the prioritization process in response to some criticism that they had taken on their prioritization process. So they delayed it by a year to go back and kind of redo their process, which I'll talk about more.
Okay. We didn't have those other years in there.
Go ahead.
Okay. So they've developed a process called Prioritization 2.0. I'm not going to go into detail about all the criteria that they use, but that's in Attachment C of your agenda packet. It's a quantitative ranking of projects by both NCDOT and the MPOs. The MPO has an approved ranking methodology that they've used in past years. And to handle this process, NCDOT created a new office called the Strategic Planning Office of Transportation, another acronym, the SPOT. So that's what we will be submitting projects to ultimately. So the MPO and DOT rank the projects. The MPO, this is a new thing. Instead of providing NCDOT with a ranked list of projects, which you see in attachment D, I believe, of the packet, you can now assign points to a project. So if number one project on the list is, to use an example that's already completed, bike lanes and sidewalks on Old Fayetteville Road, which was on the top of the board's last priority list, you know, now the MPO can assign a certain amount of points to a project like that, like up to 100 points. So
is that just because of the value the MPO values the project, or are there some factors that say, for example, if you have sidewalks that were not there, it's 10 points. If it's bike lanes, it's 15 points. If it's I can't think of it. Buses, multi something.
Bus pull-offs and bus stops. Yeah.
Yeah. Or is it just?
Or is it more subjective?
Is it more subjective?
It's that goes back to the MPO. So the MPO has a ranking methodology that includes a number of those criteria. Mm. Is it multimodal? Is it? Does it improve air quality and so forth?
Okay.
Jeff, when they rank these, do they do it blindly, or do they know which municipality?
They at NCDOT or at the MPO?
Well, where they're weighting them, where they're assigning them weights.
Not rankings, right. But what is it, score?
The points.
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 Yeah, they know the municipality.
Huh.
The description is there.
So what's the difference between top 25 or controlled total when ranking? It seems like they both require allocation of points. But.
So you can submit, an MPO can submit to NCDOT a ranked list of projects without scoring them, and NCDOT will score them automatically based on their rank. But what the Second option is gives the MPO flexibility to put more eggs in one basket or more eggs in a few baskets. So the MPO could decide to... The MPO gets 1,300 points total. I know I'm getting too technical here, but 1,300 points total. They could decide to assign 100 points to 13 projects in the whole region.
Right, right.
Or they could decide to assign 50 points to 26 projects.
Right.
So...
But the intent is that the staff and elected officials are going to work together to come up with a point allocation method. Is that
happens at the MPO level.
Right. See, it doesn't happen
at the local level. The town should submit a list in rank order, but without point totals. Now, that doesn't mean that the town could also, you know, the board could provide to Alderman Lavelle, the chair of the TAC on the MPO, guidance on, you know, point totals, but, you know, that falls under the quantitative ranking methodology that the MPO has already developed.
Okay.
Well, and you, as our TCC rep, you're not uninformed as to what might make sense in terms of some of the specific ranking points.
Sure, yeah.
But Lydia, I don't know whether you can answer this or Jeff, but is this going to make it tougher to get some of the things that we have prioritized done?
Looks like it.
Doesn't it?
And unless you're, I want to hear the rest of what, I know some of this is a little new to me too. I'd like to hear what else Jeff has to say about it.
Maybe, maybe not. I think is the answer, but go ahead.
So
not what you know, too, you know.
It's hard to say at this point. The MPO has that approved ranking methodology, and if they use that, then they will take all the projects and rank them according to that approved methodology. And then they will have to decide somehow how to assign points. And there's a few approaches you could take. You could try and make your ranking methodology as an MPO similar to NCDOT's, and then that's more of a utilitarian approach where you say, we're going to try and give a few projects a high likelihood of being on the list. Or we could have our own methodology that maybe says, you know, we put more value on multimodal projects or air quality or environmental protection, and then the projects that best meet those goals will rise to the top. But at the same time, NCDOT might have a slightly different process. So... Those projects might fare less well once they get to the statewide program. So
it might be pointed out that, I mean, you know, sometimes projects like reworking the traffic control system on the 15501 corridors rank very high in improving air quality, and yet might not be all that high a priority for town Carborough, for example.
Right, and it's a multi-jurisdiction. It's us and Chapel too, which
right.
gives it a little bit of extra weight to some degree because it's two
well,
jurisdictions.
Anyway, just to say that, you know, there's things that improve air quality and there's things that improve air quality. But anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
We're going through this exercise, and is there going to be money to do any of these? I mean, hopefully in 2 years things could be a little different. But in 2 years things could be worse.
This process right here, being for fiscal years 2014 through 2020, we're really looking at implementation of projects. If a project gets on this list, on the state's list, we're looking at implementation timeline of something like 2016 to 2020.
Right, but what I'm concerned about is I noticed a lot of things are being delayed already. And so there's going to be this backup of needs. So 2016 to 2020 becomes 2020 to 2030 as you pay catch up for the things, some real serious infrastructure things that aren't happening now and probably won't happen
for the next 2 to 4 years. So,
in other words, you're finally figuring out how this really works.
Well, it took me 20 years, but yeah.
And there are a lot of factors at work right now. I mean, you know, there's the economy, there's a lot of some of the ARRA money that kind of came in, and it was able to get some projects going a little faster than they would have. And then it got some other projects that were further down the hopper moved up a little bit. There was a rescission where the federal government took back a lot of money, and our MPO had to kind of refigure out how to realign things, and then we got some more money back, and the MPO has been figuring out how to, and we're one of the better ones at spending all of our money, but if you don't spend all of your money to a certain point, then you're penalized and you have to give it back. So there were a lot of different things, I think, at work the last year or two. Is that fair to say, Jeff, and that affected the schedule of the projects that are in the next several years?
Yeah, and even in good times, there's always going to be so much more needs submitted to the state than there is funding.
Or wants, anyway.
All right, what was it, $9 billion and then like 20, 30, 30 billion in needs?
Yeah, if you go back to our discussion we had in November, there's a presentation in there that shows the gap between the needs and the...
It's in here, too, $40 billion in highway needs versus $9 billion in revenue.
It's only a $31 billion gap.
I'm not going to concede the word need to them there, but anyway. Joel.
I would like the board to how we can figure out a way that we can point our projects such that we get them done in a reasonable amount of time. Because I know some projects take longer. I guess what I'm looking at, and I'm looking at attachment C4, and you may not have gotten to going for highway modernization projects, whatever modernization means. It's going to be very difficult to me. I shouldn't say difficult, but challenging for communities like ours who believe that multimodal is a long-term investment in taking care of, for example, congestion and safety, you know. Because when you look at lane width, it's quantitative, 20%. That's why I asked specifically about who's going to make and maybe I didn't make it clear, but who's going to make the decision about what is valued more?
And if I could speak
to the state DOT in the end.
Yeah, if I could speak to that, they developed this process specifically to try and get away from that perception of them as you know, politics getting involved in the selection of projects and move to a more quantitative side. But more specifically, I might have some good news for you about that modernization category in next few slides.
Go to the next few slides. We could use some good news.
This is just the deadlines that we've been given. Mm-hmm. The MPO has asked jurisdictions to submit projects for a list of projects to the MPO by May 18th, and then the MPOs must submit projects to NCDOT for evaluation by June. And these are the project types. This is also in the agenda abstract. There's highway, bicycle, and pedestrian category. And highway has two subclassifications. Mobility, those are the traditional highway projects, road widenings, adding turn lanes, and so forth, medians, and so forth. And the town can submit, jurisdictions can submit up to 3 new projects. And I'll get into the difference between new and already submitted. And then there's the modernization classification, which includes, like Alderman Brown, you talked about lane width. You know, that's really for, you know, if there's a road that was built, you know, 60 years ago and the lanes are really narrow, creating a dangerous situation. But in addition to that, there's other types of projects that fall underneath this modernization category. And they have given us instructions that on-road bicycle improvements, on-road bicycle improvements that are over $1 million in cost can be included in this category. And I think that's important because in the past there have been certain projects mm-hmm. that we've talked about, like Homestead Road,
yeah.
that get submitted as a highway project when they're really adding bike lanes and sidewalks and transit accommodations. Mm-hmm. And then because they're submitted on the highway list, NCDOT doesn't really know what to do with them. You know, so this is a way of being on the highway list.
So, Jeff, is this new classification, this new modernization classification, do you think that's the result of some of the comments that, like, RMPO and maybe some others have been giving to DOT about that need for something between highway and bicycle?
I don't know for sure, but if I had to guess, I'd say it had some.
I mean, it seems like a new, it's an expanded use of that category of those funds, and it's... I think they'll be well received. So.
Yeah, it's something the MPO has constantly hammered home to.
Right, several times. Every time our division reps are there, we are always telling them that there needs to be something between highway and
right.
and bicycle. You know, right. So.
Right. Joel, and then Sandy.
I'm on attachment C9, and if you get there, if I'm too early, I can let my fellow. Alderman ask his question, because I have a question of how public transportation prioritization fits overall in the project types and number for both local priority list, regional priority list, and then MPO regional list. And so I would like to be able to understand how that is going to work, because we tend to want and we tend to request better headways, more frequent service, which means you have to buy a bus, and then you have to have people to operate the bus. But they can carry so many more people than me sitting in the car with three, maybe four individuals. So, I mean...
And that's a great question, and we... the MPO staff have told us that we probably can submit transit projects, but they've not been given any further instructions on how to submit transit projects. So I think it's safe to say that we should be considering transit projects in this mix.
But the only comment I can say about this, if you want to go someplace, you've got to have a plan. And if they don't have a plan for... I don't even know how to communicate this any better, but you just cannot wake up one morning and think that you're going to have a regional bus system more robust than we have now, which we do need, which would provide economic growth and would help air quality and quality of life for the residents and the citizens of this area and in the entire state, actually. But I'm kind of disappointed in that, actually.
Well, and you would think, if nothing else, you know, gas prices and other things would force them to be thinking this way.
Hopefully at some point. Sammy.
Well, I didn't quite catch what you were pointing out.
I'm pointing out this public transportation prioritization that's on attachment C9. If you look, it's to the right here.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question was, they have these, I sense these are factors that they're going to look at, but how does that weigh into the project types and number when both the local priority list...
Yeah, they're very detailed.
Right, and then for the regional, how they're going to weigh that in terms of funding and deciding, okay, we're going to fund a public transportation project over, say, widening... I-40 once again.
Got it. So it sounds like they've started with those other things, not with this.
Well, we're somewhat talking about different pots of money here, too. Federal transit money is a different pot in some respects. So there's a limit to which transit competes with highway, although certainly... They're all considered together.
But highway, bicycle, and pedestrian definitely compete in the same Right. That money all comes
right.
from
no,
the same source on the federal level.
Yeah, well, like going back to what Joel was saying, at what point are they going to sit down and develop a master plan that incorporates both?
Right. Probably not right now.
I mean,
well, it's just a step to even do this step.
I realize that.
Including the bicycle, but you're right. And I guess there are some transit considerations even. It seems strange to us, but like even when they talk about the highways, HOV lanes, or encouraging the use of van pools and buses. And so there is some kind of minor thinking about it, but it doesn't seem, as you say, to be a part of this categorization.
My question, sorry.
Go ahead.
Asking before, the road diet would be basically fall in either modernization or bicycle, depending on whether the improvements for bikeways and sidewalks is below or above a million. Is that how a road diet would fit into this?
The road diet that we've talked about on West Main Street, that's a little bit too small to fit under this process. Is that we're just talking about resurfacing funds, which is annual funds given to the Division for Resurfacing that would cover the road diet, whatever would happen. But if it's a project that has, you know, four lanes and four vehicle lanes and no bike lanes or anything like that, and it involves changing the typical section of the road, that may very well, if it's over $1 million, fit under the modernization category. So there's just a few extra notes. All TIP projects on our list that we submit must be included in the 2035 long-range transportation plan. Transit projects may be potentially submitted, as we just talked about, but we have not been given further guidance on how those will fit into the MPO's prioritization process. And one thing is that the last local priority list that the town submitted, there was a transit project on there. So I would say that it's, for now, we should be considering those in the mix, too. And then, as we talked about, projects may be subject to reclassification. Bike pad projects like Homestead Road or Estes Drive, you know, these are the photos from the Carborough Bike Plan. These would now likely, under the definition that we've been given, fall under the modernization category.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We've been asked to submit up to three new highway projects. So projects like Estes Drive and Homestead Road and all those others that are on the list in Attachment B have already been submitted. Mm-hmm. Those should be included on there. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't hurt if the town should so choose to include those on there, as long as the list contains no more than three new projects.
Is it three including that, or?
I think it would be
three above that.
Three above that.
Oh, okay.
And you know, what we've been told is NCDOT is already going to be including things like Estes Drive, Homestead Road, for reprioritization. But you know, in order to give a context to any new projects, might be best to include those existing projects anyway as a reaffirmation of support.
So we only have a total of six.
Three new highway projects.
No, but I mean total. So if we have old ones and then three new.
But the old ones can be as many as you want. They should be included anyway.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm sorry, that's a little bit confusing, but it's kind of like just you know, just to make sure that, you know, it's on their radar screen.
So
right.
the
I understand that
the 14 that are listed on attachment F, those are would be considered old because they're from 2006.
Because they've been previously submitted.
Yeah.
Right. I just want to be
attachment
clear.
Attachment F.
Let's look back.
Yes.
Okay.
That's our last approved.
Right. So those 14 we would resubmit, and then we have three new ones above that.
If you want. You don't have to submit any new ones.
Okay. Right. So
if we submit up to three new ones, do we rank them as we see them fitting into the current 14, or do they just go to the bottom of the list?
Now, I would rank them. I would submit a list of any highway projects, existing and new, any new ones, and rank all of them, and just mark which ones are new, just to cover all our bases.
And this is only the highway or highway monetization category we talked about?
Yes, this is only the highway.
Okay.
For the bicycle and pedestrian, the MPO is asking for us to submit 6 projects. So that's 6 bicycle projects and 6 pedestrian projects.
New or old?
6 of each.
New or old.
Okay. 6 of each.
6 of each. Huh. And they've said that greenways are considered bike projects. Sidewalks, obviously pedestrian.
Okay, so the resolution calls for us to refer this to the Transportation Advisory Board and the town staff. Is that right?
Yes.
Proposed resolution. And then there's a place for where it says provides the following initial comments as guidance for staff and the TAB. So I wanted to turn. If you're done with your presentation, actually, sorry. Are you done with your presentation, more or less?
Yeah, pretty much.
I wanted to turn specifically to, I'm assuming we'll pass this resolution, but there is space for us to provide some initial comments as guidance for staff and TAB. And I guess the main thing that comes to my mind besides, there's sort of some interesting grand level policy issues involved here, but we need to refer those to TAB at this time. But we specifically discussed at a recent meeting the campus-to-campus bicycle route, and especially the need for the segment that would go from the end of Broad Street to connect to Village Drive in Chapel Hill.
Yep.
And I think that's the one thing that comes right to my mind that's not already on our previous TIP list. And I think we don't have to get into it right now, but we need to think about how to fit that into this list and where to prioritize it. So if we could make that, proposing that would be 2A. I don't know if there are some other matters that need to be.
I just had a clarification.
Yeah.
On attachment F, number 11, school, add bike lanes, sidewalks, and transit accommodations on both sides of the road from Homestead to Estes. So I guess, Mark, the question is, where does the campus-to-campus, the UNC piece come in, or do we not have to worry about the west side of Sewell for that?
Well, I think you could also look at number 4 and ask some of the same questions. Estes Drive, athletic lanes, sidewalks, transit accommodations on both sides of the road. Well, a significant portion of what's described there is the northernmost piece of the campus-to-campus bicycle connection as well. I don't know. Yeah, we don't. The good news is we don't have to have answers to any of this right now, but I think how we prioritize and how we characterize the campus-to-campus bike connection and how we might adjust Sewell School and or Estes Drive, these projects, both sort of the nature or scope of how we're describing the project and where we would prioritize these.
I would like to make a suggestion.
Yes, ma'am.
I think one that I like the TAB to consider is, and because it kind of mixes that joint jurisdiction, I think Rogers Road is a state road.
Yes, it is.
I would suggest bicycles, unless I missed it on 1 through 14, bicycle lanes, sidewalks from Rogers Road at Eubanks to Rogers to the termination Rogers Road.
Yeah, length of Rogers Road.
The length of Rogers Road.
Yes.
Some of that.
What part is missing now?
Some of it is a little bit, but why? You have it continuous. All
it's not, yeah. I mean, continuous.
Right.
I think there's a separate project that's underway right now to
the sidewalk.
Sidewalk on the west side.
From Eubanks?
Our side.
Our side. To Corporate. Meadow Run Court, which is where the town line is.
Okay, so then I would ask, because it might even be a tri-jurisdiction, from the gaps.
The gaps and the bike lanes.
So rest of Rogers Road project, whatever that may look like.
Whatever that may look like.
sidewalk gaps are all, would all be in Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
We mean the bike lane gaps, I think.
I think bike lane gaps.
That's what I think is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So that's to the TAB. You're asking for that to go.
Right. Look at that as a project. Defining that as a project and prioritizing it.
And I have a question for another project. Jeff, maybe you can enlighten me on this. But you all know, I think you know, that now there is a greenway, a paved greenway from Morris Grove Elementary. And it comes, it was county funds through the MPO. And it comes almost all the way back to the back of Tally Hill and Lake Hogan Farms. It's really nice. I mean, it's just opened up in the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. But there is a small gap, I know, between where it ends and getting over to Lake Hogan Farms or wherever. And I know we have it somewhere down the road with unidentified funds. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a CMAQ project, funding category.
Right. Well, anyway, if this is something that makes sense to be included as one of these, I would just have the TAB look at that also.
When you say that CMAQ, that piece, does that mean that it's totally covered by CMAQ, or that?
That's an 80-20%, so 80% covered by.
We need to find the 20%, basically.
No,
okay.
Non-federal match for the 20%.
Well, do we need the TAB to look through the this list and just make sure?
We just defer the whole thing to the TAB.
What is the status? I mean, I know it's brought up often, but the Estes fence and the connector between Carver and Chapel Hill, is that something that there's any possible movement on? And if so, is it something we'd want to move forward with before submitting anything?
You know, I do. I think whether or not that issue gets resolved or how it gets resolved, probably doesn't really affect whether or not to go forward with the campus to campus. But the campus to campus connection does make that issue bring it to the fore. But, you know, we have basically the situation is that we have a fairly recalcitrant property owner over there, and I think we identified as the next step that I would talk to the mayor of Chapel Hill about Chapel Hill's interest or ability to enforce maybe some of its easement rights, which I have to admit I've not done in the months since we talked about doing that. But thank you for bringing that up, and I'll pursue that issue.
Thanks.
So few of our projects ever get funded to begin with that it's seems almost absurd to think about adding to the list significantly. I think this. With some tweaking, the items that are on this priority list, plus campus to campus, Rogers Road, those are the priorities that our town has, exactly how we ought to prioritize them is what y'all need to look at. But there are a number of other federally funded projects that we're pursuing. She just mentioned one. Another is the Morgan Creek Greenway, later phases of the Morgan Creek Greenway. Is that something we would consider putting into this, or we still anticipate using STPDA funding for those projects?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that could be considered is a project for the later phases of that greenway.
Okay, well, let's add that to the list of, mm-hmm.
And you're talking about where it connects to the Chapel Hill Greenway?
Well, the part, we actually already have funding, I think, allocated for in some upcoming fiscal year for the piece that will go, that will connect.
Under the bridge.
Under the bridge and right. Up to basically about to the Berry Hill subdivision and what's the townhomes on the other side where Bob lives? Yeah. Canterbury Townhomes. But so then there's other pieces beyond
right,
that.
Right, like phase four and five go up to, potentially would go up to
Rosewalk.
Carver High School, Rosewalk, and University Lake, basically.
Yeah, those parts, there's no finding for you.
Okay. What about that part of Greensboro and or Pittsboro Road?
That's on there.
Is it?
South Greensboro?
Oh, yeah, number five, sidewalks on the west side.
Yeah.
Road from Old Pittsboro Road to Merritt Mill Road.
You need a trolley for that.
Yeah. The problem is between the requirements of the ADA and the steep grade of that hill, it's just extraordinarily expensive.
And our whole project. Poplar Crosswalk, is that too small for this process?
Pretty much, essentially, yes.
Or a roundabout at Shelton, Hillsborough, Green, Maine.
That would be eligible.
Especially
roundabouts on state maintained roads are eligible.
You know, maybe we could just refer the concept of various roundabout projects to TAB more generally. I mean, we haven't really discussed that one in particular.
Because Estes would be perfect.
I think it's possible that some of that sort of thing on Homestead Road and or Old 86. I think there's some interesting possibilities.
And East Maine. West Maine. It's a good thing. Just dreaming.
Yeah, well, and I guess what I'm saying is without getting into the details of all of those different possibilities, maybe just refer that concept to TAB. All right, so is there a motion for the resolution?
I move the resolution with our comments.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, manifest unanimously. All right.
Just one last question on that. Was I can't find the resolution here, but if I remember correctly, there is an option for a public hearing. Is that what is included in it?
A public hearing on by the TAB? Huh. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right, Sammy. But isn't that after the list is made or?
We typically would have some type of opportunity for public comment on our draft list. Is that right?
There's a few options considered. One would be if the TAB holds a kind of a community forum, and then also one of the options included in that schedule was if the schedule permits and if the board feels it would be helpful, there's a public hearing opportunity.
I'm not opposed to a public hearing.
When is this supposed to be submitted to the MPO?
May 18th.
So I think we turn it over to the TAB.
See, I think we need TAB's input first.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, that doesn't. May 18th is not going to allow us to put time on a formal public hearing night.
But that decision is a TAB decision, the public input process.
Yeah, that's one approach. Is the TAB could itself hold a community forum that's not a public hearing officially, but give folks a chance to come in.
I mean, they work with the transit. I think that's a good idea.
Given the time, I mean, you've got like 6 weeks.
But it's not something the board has to affirm. The TAB can do. It's something the TAB can.
Well, the resolution, unless you change the resolution, directs them to either do a community meeting or some other similar public output.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Or excuse me, not output.
It
does say that in the
resolution. It tells them it'd be a community meeting or similar public input.
Okay, so it's in there. All right. Okay. Item 4, request to reschedule continued discussion of rezoning of 210 Hillsborough.
Thank you, Jeff. Here's a resolution.
Second.
Maybe we should just comment as publicly as possible about what this is. There the library, potential library site rezoning was at our last meeting. We discussed the fact that we would take the matter up on April 19th. That date has been changed to April 12th. It's been moved up to April 12th. So,
which is next Tuesday.
Which is next Tuesday. So we will be taking up probably final consideration one way or the other of the issue of rezoning that property next Tuesday, the 12th, which is a week earlier than previously discussed.
Do we know if, I know they sent out mailings to people, but is that going to also be advertised in any of the papers?
Yes. Isn't that right, Kathy? Weren't they advertising?
Yeah. Yeah, there was an advertisement that went in the paper this Sunday. So it was in the Chapel Hill Herald.
Mark, you did a very nice job of explaining about why we did not, you know, that we gave the wrong dates last time. Maybe you want to just clarify that so folks understand what that
came about. Yeah, this is, I'm always cautious about speaking for the entire Board of Aldermen, but I think I'm on safe ground with this one. We were very reluctant to change the date because we had so publicly stated it was going to be the 19th. But it turns out that to wait until the 19th will essentially cost the Orange County government and all of us as taxpayers about $10,000 because of the terms of Orange County's contract with the seller of that property. So we've moved the date to April 12th at the request of the county commissioners in order to save $10,000 of county tax dollars. We were simply misinformed by county staff about what that deadline was when we picked the April 19th date. So this change is being indeed is being driven by an error made by county staff and. It was a good faith error, but it was not the doing of the town of Carrboro, either this Board of Aldermen or the Carrboro town staff, to wind up in this situation where we're having to move the date up. But
could we also just I know it's not our job to advertise it, it's the county's, but just forward that information to like the Carrboro Citizen to let them know. And at their discretion, to, if they want to, you know, publish it or not.
They'll get the notice, but I suspect. Well, I don't want to speak for them, but I don't know that they would publish a notice at no cost. And we were very clear with the county that any publication cost would be on them.
I was just thinking
it was
more
suggested
like
to the county
when they
should publish it in the Citizen.
They sometimes summarize our meetings, and hopefully they could include that in there.
I'm just saying they have until noon.
Well, I think they have been in contact with the people
they've notified everybody within 1,000 feet, I believe, and everybody who signed up to speak at the public hearing. So they've...
Okay.
Is that correct, Chris? So, I mean, they've gone to pretty great lengths to make sure that anybody who's interested who has expressed a previous interest has been personally notified.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And you all should have something at your places that there's a mailing list.
Right. That's all I got. Well, I got three copies of the postcard myself, so I know they sent it.
You knew.
I already knew about it. It's true. All right. Actually, I think it was a letter, not a postcard. But anyway, yes.
Just one more thing. I know we had a lot of requests for information when we have this hearing, and understanding also that the county asked if we had any properties ourselves that we may want to consider. If staff could perhaps identify anything of the size of if it's 20,000 square feet that they're asking for, then the footprint being, if it were a two-level library, 10,000 square feet that we own, or maybe even, I know there's a map that was made for 20,000 square foot properties, perhaps another map that is of 10,000 square foot foot properties in the downtown.
I think at some point we're going to need to have a discussion with the county, you know, depending on what happens next week. But I think we should have a collegial discussion with the county commissioners about, you know, because maybe people aren't that aware of what's going on in Carborough, or maybe county staff isn't quite aware of what we consider residential, what we consider commercial. Not their fault. They just don't live here. So maybe we need to get together and be very thankful that the county is interested in wanting to help us get a library, and say, hey, you know, instead of giving me granddad's old Cadillac, you know, can I get the Miata? So
grandpa ain't getting you the Miata,
which is smaller. So maybe, you know, we need to have that kind of conversation.
I was planning on suggesting, actually, at our meeting next week, after whatever vote happens on the rezoning issue, that I was planning on proposing that maybe we try to organize a joint meeting with the county commissioners, mm-hmm. to talk about the library issues and, I guess, potentially some other things.
Yeah.
But
we had said at the retreat that we were interested in having that kind of meeting to talk to them about economic development and other issues like that of our downtown. So.
But why don't we all just give that question some further thought over the course of the next week, and we'll take it up April 12th. Okay.
So
did we vote on the rescheduling resolution or not?
We seconded it. So.
Who moved it?
I thought I moved it. Or
and Sammy seconded it?
Second.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Not passed unanimously. All right. If we adjourn now, we catch the end of the women's championship.
That's right.
Oh, no, but we can't.
Remember.
We have a personnel.
Yeah, we have a closed session item to discuss a personnel matter with you all. Shouldn't take long.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Is there a motion to go into closed session to discuss a personnel item?
Yes.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Will somebody please turn off the brights? Excuse me, John.